For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next. Support comes from Carthage College, hosting a panel discussion titled Gay Rights and Religious Liberty, Constitutional Crossroads, or Politics as Usual, Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock in the Clawson Center for World Business. The public is welcome. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. In part one of today's program, Mary Norris, a longtime editor for The New Yorker magazine, talking about her wonderful memoir called Confessions of a Comma Queen. In part two of today's Morning Show, Nick Dembski talks about the Bonk series, which he co-founded and curates. They have a couple of interesting performances coming up. All that on today's Morning Show here on WGTD. I'm certainly excited about the next few minutes of the morning show because I have the privilege of speaking with a very gifted wordsmith by the name of Mary Norris. She has worked for one of my favorite magazines, The New Yorker, for decades and has just written a memoir of sorts called Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen, in which Mary Norris talks about the work which she has done at The New Yorker, primarily as a copy editor, but she has done other work there as well, and mostly looking at the words written by others and sorting out the errors, working for greater clarity, and so on. And of course, as she has done that, it has been a great adventure for her to come to understand the beauty and the vagaries of the English language, far greater than most of us actually fully appreciate or understand. And if for anyone who loves language and wants to know more about it and wants to use it more effectively, this book is a wonderful and entertaining place to start. Again, it's called Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen, published by W.W. Norton and Company. And Mary Norris, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you. That was a lovely introduction. Thank you very much. I apologize for the sound of New York in the background.
That's all right. I'm glad to be speaking with you. I wonder if you could say a word about an entertaining portion at the front of the book in which you talk about some of the earliest part-time jobs which you had, which none of which would seem to directly point towards the work which you are ultimately so well known for at The New Yorker magazine. Just list those off for our listeners and maybe say a word about how in maybe some surprising ways there actually is a hint of what was to come.
Well, some people have suggested that my first job, which was checking seats at a public pool in Cleveland to make sure that people didn't have athlete's foot before they entered the pool, that was a way of rooting out error I hadn't thought of before. Mainly my checkered career before I got to The New Yorker was all about financial independence. You know, I would do anything to make money. That's not completely true, but I was when I was determined to get a job, I got a job. It was easier for me, usually in my hometown, than anywhere else in Cleveland. But that first job, I was 15 and a half. I checked feet at the pool. Later, after I graduated from college and went back to Cleveland between college and graduate school, I worked in a costume company. And then I had the best job of my life, which was driving a milk truck in Cleveland. I had my own milk route. I did crash the truck early on, but they let me keep the job. And graduate school, after I finished my coursework, I worked in a cheese factory, packaging cheese. I was interested in the dairy industry. And really, that's the association between that job, my jobs in the dairy industry, and my job at The New Yorker. These were jobs that when I went to interview for, I really, really, really wanted. And so I didn't have to put up any front. I could be honest in the interview, and I got the jobs.
And the rest is a sort of history, I suppose. You write this towards the beginning of the book. It has been more than 20 years since I became a page okayer, a position that exists only at the New York Times.
At
the New Yorker, where you query proofread pieces and manage them with the editor, the author, a fact checker, and a second proofreader until they go to press. One of the things you write, I like about my job, is that it draws on the entire person. I think a lot of people looking at the job of a editor or proofreader would not see that to be true. It seems like a highly focused kind of position that draws upon a very focused kind of expertise. Tell us why you see it differently, that you see it as the kind of work that draws upon the whole person and a plethora of skills and gifts.
Well, when I first started out, I was on the copy desk, which was the first layer of changes that went onto a piece when it went into print, and that was just spelling and putting New Yorker style on words and a little bit of punctuation. But as I moved up to page okaying, that involves you get to use your own sensibility more when you're working on somebody's prose, which means that you can suggest changes to sentence structure, and you can question sometimes facts in it. I'm not a fact checker, but sometimes something sneaks through. One of my proudest moments was I once caught a mistake in Middle English because I had studied Chaucer, and I knew that when used to be spelt W-H-A-N in the Middle Ages, and that was kind of an amazing use of my higher education that had no use. I had no really practical use for up till then. So what I mean is just that you can, in fiction, if a character is visiting Cleveland and drives the wrong way from the airport, you know that because you've lived in Cleveland. So all of your personal experience can be brought to bear on the things that you read to save the author from a mistake.
On the other hand, you point out that there's also, in a sense, a line, not that it's a fixed line that never moves or that it's always the same line in every instance, but there is, at least theoretically, some line that someone in your position should not cross. And you tell us about a very fancy word I've never seen or heard before, which talks about going beyond your province, exceeding, in a sense, your authority or your expertise, maybe. Tell us about that word and about that principle to which you also have to adhere.
Well, the word is ultra crepidate.
Right.
Ultra crepidation, which is, it does mean creeping beyond your station. And that would be, for instance, if the word first came up when I was reading a piece by John McPhee, and it was about writing and being edited, and the word, in fact, was in a passage that was about the page okayers at The New Yorker, and he wrote that occasionally one of them goes beyond her station and suggests something that is out of the ordinary. For what he was talking about was I had let him know that people from Manchester are called Mancusians, and that... Well, the second proofreader on that piece suggested that when McPhee wrote going beyond their station, that he change it to ultra crepidate. And that's a perfect example of somebody going beyond his station. McPhee would love the word ultra crepidate, but he wouldn't want it to appear in his own prose unless he had chosen it. And to suggest that he change go beyond her station to ultra crepidate would have been ultra crepidation. You know? It's been going beyond my station.
Right. I think a lot of people would assume that a lot of the work you do is limited to being kind of a fancy human spell checker, which for a lot of people feels like something maybe relatively superfluous, given the fact that we all type on word processors and computers now that correct our spelling for us. I think you really are persuasive as you talk about that kind of technology and the way in which you have some concerns with at least certain facets of it. Not that you would, I think you don't turn off the spell checker, but there are other kinds of technology supposedly to aid us in our writing that you have a real problem with. Can you say a word about that?
Well, the autocorrect function on my phone drives me crazy. You know, if you make a little typo, it makes a whole new word for you. It doesn't understand any nuances. It doesn't understand attempts at foreign languages. And it can completely pervert the sense of what you're saying. And the reason that the spell check is not the final word is that it does not it doesn't recognize the context of what the word is in. And there are so many words that are homophones that sound the same but look different. One of the ones that I wrote about is flower, F-L-O-W-E-R, and flower, F-L-O-U-R, that was the making of my career in the beginning. I found a flower spelt wrong just before a piece went to print, and it's what brought me to the notice of some of the editors at The New Yorker, and made them eventually trust me to proofread. But that's what it's missing. It's missing context, and it's missing the nuance that a human reader can bring to something. It's not just about the spelling. It's about having a first reader, too. That's very good for a writer to have somebody read and vet a piece before it's put into print and set out into the world.
Hmm. By the way, I so enjoyed not only all of that's in your book about, I mean, how to use commas properly, how to use apostrophes correctly, more about the background of dictionaries being created and different sort of principles behind them. But I also loved the way in which you take us inside a lot of the work which you have done at the New Yorker. In particular, I found fascinating when you talked about the work of a collator. And, of course, a collator at a place like The New Yorker, that is, you're using that term differently than I think most of us think of it as just the simple assemblage of pages, and then you staple them all together, and there you go. This is something a bit more sophisticated and fascinating work in which all kinds of things come together. Just say a quick word about the fascinating work of a collator at The New Yorker.
Well, that was a job that no longer exists as a department at The New Yorker, but it was in an office where we got the proofs from all the different departments on an author's work. We got the author's proof himself. We got a proof from the fact checker. We got the editor's proof, and we got a proof from the legal department, and we got the proofreader's proofs, usually two of them. And it was the job of the collator with a pencil on paper to put all of those changes on a single proof for the printing plant. And then the printing plant had to decipher your handwriting and make the changes and send it back again. We're still doing that, but on a more sophisticated level. It used to be kind of a medieval job where you actually wrote by hand on a proof. And now those changes are all put onto an electronic file. And we do, at the end, we keep a paper trail. We still have what we call a reader's proof that has all the changes marked in pencil so that the next layer of proofreader can compare the two. They can compare the marks that we wanted with the things that went onto the proof. And the difference here is that the okayer is now the typesetter as well, because you're making the changes yourself on the electronic file.
Hmm. You write at one point, when I finally made it to the copy desk, it was a long time before I could once again read for pleasure. I spontaneously copy edited everything I laid eyes on. I find that to be a really fascinating observation. It's probably akin to somebody like me who is, I am a music professor in my other life, and in some ways you sit and listen to a piece of music and you don't do so for pure pleasure. It's hard not to do so without analyzing it on some level, which in itself, I suppose, can be kind of a pleasurable thing. But I wonder, to what extent have you been able to move past that tendency? Is that a tendency that's still with you today, to copy edit every single thing that you lay eyes on?
Fortunately, no. I am now able to read for pleasure again. That lasted a couple of years when I was just so worried about my job that I was practicing on everything that I saw, I guess. But after a few years, I was once again able to read for pleasure, and I can still read for pleasure. I'm not saying that I don't notice typographical errors and that I don't wonder about certain decisions in punctuation, but they don't distract me from the pleasure of reading anymore. I don't know how it happened, but I'm really glad it happened. And maybe it's a matter of just being off duty. I can tell when I'm off duty, and I can enjoy, you know, reading a book before I go to bed. And if there's a typo in it, I don't mind. I don't correct it. I don't write a letter to the editor, the publisher, or the author. You know, I just let it go. Everyone makes mistakes.
Very good. Well, it's a fascinating book, start to finish. I enjoyed it so much and came away with a newfound appreciation, for instance, for the editor of the Journal of Singing, for which I write a column. And I suddenly find myself with a profound appreciation for the scrupulous editing which our editor-in-chief does, not only with what I submit, but everybody else and all that they submit. And of course, everything that we take in hand that has been carefully shepherded to our hands by editors, sometimes many editors, that is work largely invisible to the rest of us. And your book helps us to appreciate that important work. And it's a lot of fun besides.
Thank you so much.
The book is Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comic Queen, by W.W. Norton. Mary Norse, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I have a feeling that some of you in the Racine and Kenosha area have heard of a performance series called Bonk, B-O-N-K. Bonk is a series which primarily focuses on poetry, literature reading, music, and it will occasionally allow in other kinds of artistic expression, and it is a freewheeling, largely an informal series in which some really, really exciting things have happened. And I'm really pleased for this portion of the morning show to be able to sit across the table from one of the co-founders and the current director and curator of the Bonk series, Nick Dembski, who is also at the Racine Public Library, officially as a youth services librarian, although he was telling me in some respects his role there has evolved into that of outreach librarian, I mean, in terms of shepherding a number of the outreach activities of the Racine Public Library. And Bonk is one of them. Nick, first of all, my recollection is Bonk began pretty much under the auspices of the library. Is that right?
It actually, that's a kind of a good, interesting bit of the history. It actually began independently. I started it with two other artists in the Racine area. One of them is now a professor at University of Wisconsin-Parkside. His name is Nicholas Michael Ravnikar. And the other one is an artist named Matt Speck. And we just started it independently. You know, there was a few things in the area, like open mics and things like that, but all the artistic offerings, especially for the performing arts and the literary arts, seemed very just based in our community. And it was kind of creating a feedback loop of just the people in the community, like they were the only poets that they were even reading. So we just wanted to see more influence from outside of the community. So we created Bonk. And the very first, we had our first event in October of 2008, and there was like 50 people at the first event. You know, when you're starting a poetry and et cetera series in Racine, you don't necessarily know what you're going to get. So once that started just proving like, oh, this is actually something the community wants, that was when the library kind of said, you know, we would like to have this under our umbrella. We'd like to sort of sponsor this. And they've been incredibly generous you know, it wouldn't have been sustainable if the library hadn't stepped in early like that.
Yeah. Remind me, I feel like once upon a time I knew the answer to where the name Bonk came from. Does that stand for something, or is that...
That is a great question also. So it's, yeah, people are always like, oh, you run that boink or that honk or whatever, you know, it's just this weird onomatopoeia. And the sort of origin story to that, you know, it's a bizarre random thing, but the other two founders of the series and I, before we ran Bonk, we just would get together at like 6:30 in the morning at a local cafe once a week and critique each other's writing. And I had come up with a word in those meetings for when someone did something really beautifully in their piece of, you know, their poem, maybe really subtly, and then they repeated it and overstated again. I was like, this is bonk, man. You're bonking your reader over the head with it. And so when we were brainstorming for things to call the series, one of the other guys said, what about Bonk? And we were just like, ha ha, yeah. Hey, wait a minute.
So the light bulb goes on.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting, too, because so you coined the term as a rather critical term for something that overstays its welcome. And that's certainly not the case with Bonk. It's as popular as ever.
We hope not, anyways.
Right. That is the design. I'm so glad to get that clarified, because I think for a lot of people, we think of it indelibly linked with the library. So I thought of it as that's where the gestation took place. I'd forgotten that, in fact, it was something that you just sort of created out of the blue. So, or not out of the blue, but I mean on your own.
Independently.
Right. So how exactly did you go about pursuing that specific goal which had prompted you, namely to sort of bring in fresh voices, not the same voices which seem to gravitate to those open mics wherever they may be?
Yeah.
I mean, what was the means by which to bring in new voices?
You know, again, that's a really fascinating question. When we were starting this, We had no idea what we were going to do. Just even for me, Bonk has been going for 6.5 years now, since 2008. For me, just even getting to be a part of Bonk has been such an insane blessing, and it's really changed just who I am as a writer and how I experience the arts. I experience it much more communally now, I think. Hmm. But when we started it, you know, we didn't know that many. We read writers outside of the community, but we didn't necessarily know them personally. We didn't have, like, you know, we weren't sexy. We're like, we're in Racine, Wisconsin. Do you want to come out here and read? And they're like, where is that? What are you talking about? So a lot of it, and a lot of it started off with just like having local performers that we thought weren't getting enough attention, like not enough people knew about them, and they're really... ready for bigger platforms, basically.
Yeah.
So we wanted to just try to provide the bigger platforms for that. But, now Bonk has, in at least certainly in some literary circles and in some independent music circles, Bonk has a national reputation. You know, we have people from all over the country emailing us, letting us know, hey, I'm going to be coming through the Midwest on a tour, things like that. So as far as what the impetus was for that, like I say, it was just us wanting, we thought we have these really great artists here, but we want to see them getting influenced by different things. We didn't think that necessarily had a vehicle, like we didn't have a space for that to happen in the community yet. And then for the how it happened, you know, it just built off its own momentum. Fortunately, we realized, like, so what the format that we have is we have three featured performers, usually at least once a month, just one event a month usually. And so we kind of knew, all right, next month we got these three slots, we gotta fill it. And that makes you, even if you don't know a lot of people outside of the community, that makes you just like start researching. I know I've had to do so much research about who the literary artists are in the region, who the independent musicians are in the region, and beyond that, you know, it's been wonderful to have that burden incumbent upon me.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty fun gauntlet to run.
Absolutely, yeah.
You mentioned that 50 people came to your first performance. That sounds like a really good group of people. I don't know that you meant it. I got the gist of the way you said it was that, well, we only started with 50 people, but 50 people when nobody even knows what this thing is pretty darn good, right?
Right. Yeah.
It seems like it was an encouraging beginning.
It very much was. It very much was. And if, you know, I mean, I even prior to Bonk, you know, we built that off many models we'd seen. Most of those models were in Chicago and Milwaukee. So I'd especially been going to, you know, readings and different literary events in Chicago and Milwaukee. Like, they, you know, lots of those, it's pretty rare for those series, even if it's at a big academic prestigious school sometimes, to get that many people. It's just kind of not the standard, especially for poetry readings. So that told us something special. And that's still, I mean, that is very much still the case today. I just, our last two events, we had just around 100 people at both of them, which is glorious. And I just came back this weekend from this huge writing conference in Minneapolis. It's called the Association of Writers and Writers Writing Programs Conference. And I saw the fellow who, a poet named Ross Gay, who was at our event in March. He's this fantastic poet. And he said, you know, he thanked me again, just sort of profusely. Thank you so much for having me. He said, you know, I wasn't quite sure what to expect. You know, Racine, Wisconsin, like, I don't know. Well, and it's very true. When you're on the road giving readings, you can have great experiences and not so great. But he just said, man, I never expected the energy and just the community that's there in a place that's not known for anything having to do with literature, you know. We're really blessed in that way. This community formed like Voltron.
Cool. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Nick Dembski, co-founder and curator of the Bonk series, which has a performance coming up this weekend in Racine at the Southwest, I'm sorry, in Kenosha.
That's
at
right.
The Southwest
That's right.
Library this Saturday, and a performance of sorts coming up the following weekend up in Racine. So over the years and even now, and I don't know how much of the choices of the specifics who come to Bonk or rest on your shoulders alone personally, but but traditionally, how has that choice been sort of made in terms of what's a good poet to appear on Bonk? For instance, I mean, since poets come in all shapes and sizes and so on, but is there a certain sort of category of poet, a certain kind of poet in terms of personality or outlook or perspective, where you feel like that's an especially good fit for Bonk?
That's a really interesting question too. That's you know, and that's that. I think there's been an evolution of that as we've gotten to see. When we started, we didn't know what, you know, what we were making. We're like, let's see what this turns into. And I feel like even as recently as like June, I was still having revelations about what you're talking about, because you see the community that formed itself, no matter what I was trying to make or someone else was trying to make, this community decides what it is on its own. And I have noticed that we bring a lot of, you know, challenging, strange, abstract, experimental writers. But also, and that's a little true for musicians too, but also just, you know, it's become very clear that our community, it's not, you know, Columbia College in Chicago, it's not NYU. And so if we bring someone who has really challenging work, but they're not incredibly personable, maybe it's because we're a Midwest town, I don't know, but our community is just like, you know what, I'm not interested in it. I mean, we've had, you know, National Endowment of the Arts fellows here. We've had several NAACP Image Award nominees here, like people who are very highly decorated. But our community wants to connect with the people who are writing the poetry. You know, they're not as concerned with the accolades necessarily. And mm-hmm. I love that about our community. Like, they really care, and they treat the poets who come in and all the artists who come in like family when they come.
Hmm.
Yeah.
One thing about poetry, and I'm not all that thorough a student of poetry, so
right
I'm, so I'm no experienced connoisseur by any
sure.
means, but the little exposure to poetry I have, one of the things that it seems apparent to me is that it's a really different experience to take in poetry that you're reading off the page. That is,
yes.
to read a poem and to read it again and read it again and deeply ponder it and so
right.
on, versus hearing poetry read or recited aloud and taking it in that way. As far as I'm concerned, it's completely different.
It's very different.
And it seems to me that there is some poetry that is better consumed and understood off of the printed page when it's read by the reader,
right.
consumed in that respect, versus hearing somebody recite poetry. And maybe when you hear poetry read all the time, you start to be able to take in even the most complex sort of poetry. I'm not particularly good at that. I just wonder when you...
We very much welcome people who aren't. They fit in very well at Bonk,
well,
actually.
That's good. But I just wonder when you think about bringing in a poet, are there certain poets or certain kinds of poetry that lend themselves better to this sort of venue where their poetry is not going to be read and reread and reflected over in that respect, but just heard, just the way that you... hear a song you've never heard for the first
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, you know, you're making such an insightful comment. Really, just I mean, we're talking. You're saying poetry, particularly, but just art in general. I know you're a musician and you know, involved in the theater, and certainly those things like reading a theater text, reading a script, is so different from actually experiencing a theatric performance, and that can be just as true for music or poetry or anything else like that. And one thing maybe particularly worth noting about poetry in that respect is, you know, poetry has existed longer than writing has existed. Like, poetry is an ancient part of our DNA, basically, and just, like, inherent in, you know, part of what makes up the human experience. So to hear... you know, a poem coming out of the poet's mouth is taking part in a tradition that goes beyond. And trust me, I'm sure you can relate. I love nothing more than sitting quietly with a book and just having that intimate experience with whoever wrote it, who's not there, right?
Right. Usually not there.
Yeah. But this is such a different, just kind of holy experience. And to get to your question about, you know, sort of like, is there a certain person, certain kind of poet that lends themselves well for that or something? There is in the poetry culture, I guess, you know, there's sort of you hear the term poet voice, like there's someone who's reading a poem very dryly and just like, you know, well, why aren't I just sitting with this book and reading it quietly myself? That is not typically what we end up bringing to Bonk. We, you know, we end up bringing things that add to the experience of the work on the page, and we're really grateful for that. So it's not just poetry. You know, we bring in, like, we'll have in May Liam Callahan, who's a fiction writer in Milwaukee, teaches at UW-Milwaukee, and this is also very not necessarily true for all fiction writers, but he's such a fabulous presence. He's such a fabulous reader of his own work, you know. And those are things that we seek out. We bring in a lot of spoken word performers. In July, I remember, we had an event at the D.P. Wigley Building in Racine, and we brought in Hakeem Bellamy, who's the first poet laureate of Albuquerque, New Mexico. And he you know, he's got a spoken word background, a slam poetry background. So he's very enthusiastic. You know, he's like preaching the poetry gospel at you. And that's definitely the sort of thing we have at Bonk. Like, we create Bonk events not just to hear art together in a space, but because we want to inspire our community, and we want people to walk away feeling like, yes, there are good things. You know, we can do more than just go to the bar on a Saturday night, you know, and that is...
Or the movie theater.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's true. When people find Bonk, usually they hold on to it very tightly and just love it for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Nick Dembski, who is co-founder and curator of the Bonk series. And although we have plenty of time remaining, I want to make sure, for the sake of anybody who has to sneak away before we're done, give you a chance to talk about what is coming up most quickly this Saturday at 6 p.m., the 18th of April, at the Southwest Branch Library here in Kenosha. Tell us what is going to happen Saturday night. Is it going to be a fairly typical example of Bonk?
It in some ways it is. So this is actually great. I'm personally am super grateful to the Kenosha Library Branch, because this is technically a different event than just Bonk proper. So we've been doing Bonk in the library world. You know, like, I have really gotten to enjoy the status of, like, superstar librarian because I made this series and incorporated it into library work, and people are like, this is crazy. You know, this doesn't, like, public libraries don't even usually have success with checking out books of poetry, let alone having famous poets come from all over the country and musicians and other things to perform for the public and having great turnouts for it. So what we've been getting to do is do satellite events at other libraries because they're so interested. They want to maybe even adopt the model of what we're doing for their own community. So we've done it at different places. We've done it at Horicon Public Library. We did it in November at the Wisconsin Library Association conference even. So it was just like all librarians getting exposed to it. So because there's so many cool, cutting-edge, great librarians at the Kenosha Library, they fortunately said, you know, please, please come over here, even though we're so close to them. So this event is kind of like a best of in some ways. It's all people that have done Bonk before. In fact, I'm one of the readers for the event on this Saturday, which is very atypical. I've done that like maybe once in the 6.5 years that Bonk has been going on. But I know a lot of people in the area, and since it's close, I said, I want to get more, just more people to come support this event for them. But we also have coming up to this event, it's going to be hosted by this fantastic spoken word poet named Nico Moore, who's in the Kenosha community. He's really involved in the community, just like incessantly positive and really inspirational and brilliant lyricist. And then we have the mythical and legendary Brent Mitchell, another Kenosha native musician who is one of the best musicians in Southeast Wisconsin, hands down. He's out of control. Been shortlisted for Grammy before. You know, he certainly goes beyond the bounds of our community with his reach. And then the last performer is a young musician who has been playing Bonk for years now. When he was very young, he started. But he goes by the handle Mexico City is Sinking. His name is Marco Jaimez, which is true, right? his name is Marco Jaimez. But he, you know, the reason I have the good opportunity when we're doing these extension Bonk events, these satellite Bonk events, that I can just sort of cherry pick really great performers we'd have over the past and put them in. We had the Milwaukee poet Dasha Kelly. She was going to be one of the people. But she got invited by the embassy of Botswana to do. Yeah, so we were like, you know what? We're going to give you a get out of jail free card for this one. So it's a little testosterone heavy now. It's all men instead.
Okay. Do you think very much about how three different people are going to sort of fit together in the course of one evening? Or is bonk the kind of thing where that isn't actually the point? I mean, there's certain sorts of performance things like this where you'd really want a sense of cohesiveness and flow and so on. And maybe bonk is the kind of thing where it's just at its nature freewheeling enough that you almost don't want it to be too cohesive or too flowing from one thing to another. I mean, do you think very much about that? Or generally speaking, do you just get three good people and you see what happens?
It's like so clear that you're a part of the arch community, you know, because you've got these great insightful questions. I would say for that, it's kind of a little of column A and a little of column B. Like, we love the tagline for Bonk kind of is cross-pollinate. So we love bringing in, you know, there's not, I said like there's models for this, but there's not a lot of models where like you will see music and maybe a spoken word artist and maybe a literary fiction reader or, you know, academic poet or something like that. You won't usually necessarily see those all together, whether you're in a big city or anything. So the idea of cross-pollination and almost a little disharmony is very important to us and was from the get-go. Also, the idea of just multiculturalism, which is sort of a complicated term, but since it's the most accessible one, I'll use that. You know, we really care about that. That was another thing with getting people from outside of the community to influence us. We really care about people in this community hearing voices that they wouldn't necessarily. And so culture is defined pretty broadly when I say that. But at the same time, definitely there's always that like, would these people, you know, if for some reason I think like performers would be at odds with each other somehow, that's not going to happen. It's so interesting when you're organizing events like that. What makes something go great? The difference between that and what just like, that was like an okay event is really ambiguous and hard to tell. But sometimes you just kind of let the spirit lead you on that and hope it all fits together.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm reminded of something else that's quite a different series, but on the other hand has some of the same aspirations, the Music and More.
At First
Presbyterian, which happens to also be this in this kind of trilogy model, and you might have somebody reading poems and somebody playing a Beethoven sonata and somebody singing Barbershop. And in some respects on the surface, it looks like this kind of crazy quilt. And yet, everyone that I've ever been involved in or attended, sometimes that just made it more fun. I mean, it kind of reminded you of how wide open the world is.
And that's such a, you know, we're so lucky in the community to have that series. The fact that they've been able to keep it free also, it's just a glorious thing. Bonk, you know, fortunately, as part of being a public library service now, basically, that's just inherent to Bonk's model. And that really makes a difference. We get people who would not be able to come otherwise if that weren't the case. And everything, you know, there's lots of money that goes on in behind Bonk, but it's pretty much all grant, donation, or sponsor. You know, those are the financial engines behind that, and we're so grateful for that.
So following this event in Kenosha on this Saturday, the 18th of April, something is happening on Saturday, the 25th, and I know that you're excited to talk about it because it really helps highlight the collaborative spirit that has been important to Bonk right from the start.
Right. Yeah, so the big annual I love this event because it's one of the great examples of Kenosha and Racine doing things together and just, you know, crossing that KR County Road.
Yeah, right.
The program called Get Behind the Arts, which is this huge annual, basically celebration of the arts for Kenosha and Racine. And part of it is on the Friday, which I think is April 26th, they have a big preview party where everyone gets together in one space and celebrates in different ways. And that's they switch off every year having that in Kenosha and Racine. That's going to be in Racine this year. But then for Saturday and I believe Sunday, the idea is people have gotten maps and things at the preview party, and every gallery, every artist studio, or as many as possible in those two communities are just open for people to come and visit and, you know, actually get behind the doors where maybe, especially with the artist studios, maybe you wouldn't usually just be walking into that or having the public there. And what Bonk is going to do, we love, you know, we would rather support great events and get more people to them than, like, also have an event on that day and sort of divide and conquer the arts community accidentally. So Bonk is going to, on Saturday from 1 to 3, just have 6 performers at a place called the Racine. You know, the building's technically called the Racine Business Center. It's on 16th Street in Racine. Some people know it as the Von Schrader Building. Other people know it as the 16th Street Artist Studios. It's this insanely cool building, the size of a neighborhood, you know, and it was just where the Mitchell Wagons were created.
Oh, right.
So all the floors are actually slanted because they would start creating the wagons on the top floor and just kind of like roll it down as it went. So it's this really super industrial, interesting, weird space, but it's also an arts incubator. So you've got manufacturing businesses with shops next to artist studios throughout the whole building. And so we're just going to have some musicians and poets and other performers just kind of performing and adding more to that space during that. I know we've got Naomi Marie, who's a fantastic musician based out of Racine. We also have Marco Jaimez, again, will be playing that event. One of the Bonk volunteers who musically goes by the name Gray City Blues, he'll be playing. So it's a fantastic lineup. We're really excited even just to be a part of that.
Terrific. Yeah. So I assume there's a website where people can find out even more about Bonk and about things that are coming up in the near future?
There is. The best couple ways to find out about Bonk. One, we have a Facebook page. So certainly, you know, definitely like the Facebook page, follow the Facebook page. There's also, my name is Nick Dembski, and I'm on Facebook. And, you know, all of us at Bonk, we have a team of 10 volunteers. We all care about making relationships through this. So, you know, feel free to connect with me on Facebook. Like, feel free to write me. I'm a real human being. So Facebook is one way. Then there's a listserv where our email is bonk.racine@gmail.com. And anyone who wants to be added to our email listserv, just which lets people know when events are happening, you know, you just send an email to bonk.racine@gmail.com with just the subject heading listserv. And there you go. You're in like Flynn. And as you said, the web address is bonkperformanceseries.wordpress.com. But you could also just put Bonk Racine in, you know, in any search engine.
And Nick Dembski is going to come up sooner or later.
Yeah. Right, right.
Nick Dembski, this has really been fun. I applaud you and your two co-creators for coming up with this great idea and for all the work you've done to shepherd it through to all these years later as it goes strong and adds so much to our community.
Thank you.
I appreciate you joining me today on The Morning Show.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
Nick Dembski, co-founder and curator of the Bonk series. And I'm Gregory Berg. And tomorrow on The Morning Show, Professor Art Sear from Carthage College paying his monthly visit to the program, offering analysis of current events. On Thursday, we preview this weekend's concert of the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra as they wind up their 75th anniversary season. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from Carthage College, hosting a panel discussion titled Gay Rights and Religious Liberty, Constitutional Crossroads, or Politics as Usual, a Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock in the Clausen Center for World Business. The public is welcome. A sunny, mild day today with a high of 63 degrees inland, a little cooler near the lake, clear overnight, low of 39. Another beautiful day tomorrow, high of 63 degrees. This is WGTDH.